chat. Keep it alive through these lines I write. I keep it live cause I thrive on mic. Just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct hits on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling when you feeling them flares. They can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch the scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beating to the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope, yo. Man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursue.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio Show. Once again, with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. I'm also joined by my co-host, DB. How's it going?
Pretty good, Nick. Pretty good.
Make sure you guys join us every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday here on UCY at the same time, 8 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. Eastern time, as we decode the news on Mondays and Wednesdays. And then Levon has a – our other host has a show on Friday that's a bit more about other things, not so political. So make sure you tune into that as well if you're not so much into the political stuff. But hopefully you are because you're here tonight. A lot of stuff going on this weekend and a lot of news that, you know, is spilling over from last week. I mean, it's been a huge, huge weekend as far as, you know, a lot of the stuff that's going on in Ukraine. So I figured we'd go right into that first.
Right. I mean, it's just the beginning, right? This is the beginning of it. And they're carving it up like I thought they would a couple weeks ago when I knew Crimea was going to come over to Russia. And man, what a lopsided vote too, 95%. Of the population voted to join Russia and disband their military. And now the Ukrainian military is moving in. And of course, they're going to have provocateurs among their ranks and be backed by a lot of weapons. And, you know, it'll become some kind of border war now to establish where the new border will be. They're going to try to grab as much of Ukraine as they can, as much as the pipeline for the natural gas as they can. But if they control the area of Crimea, which looks like they're going to be able to, they're going to dictate energy policy for all of Europe, not just Western Europe, but all of Eastern Europe as well.
Yeah, and, you know, let's face it, that's basically what this is all about. It's about the resources, and it's about who can control what. You know, in the Western way of thinking, which is central banking, you know, rob everybody, doesn't matter who they are. And then you got the Russian way, which is strong arm, backdoor type stuff. You know, either way, both of them aren't really good for people, you know. And unfortunately, the people in Ukraine are going to be the ones that end up with the raw deal when this, you know, whatever it is that plays out here, you know, whatever happens, unless some miraculous thinking all of a sudden becomes, you know, the majority in that country. I mean, this thing isn't going to probably end well for the majority of people, no matter what side of the equation they're on.
No, and it doesn't matter what country you live either. I mean, if it branches out into something worldwide, it'll touch everybody everywhere.
Yeah, and we're going to have Michael Rodriguez on later on at about half past the hour to talk about some alternative energy ideas. That way people don't have to rely on these, you know, on these pipelines going through Ukraine and Europe, so that, you know, so that we don't have to have these proxy wars over these resources. Everybody's got the sun. I mean, the sun, it comes for everybody, you know, so you don't have to fight over that. You know, so that's what's really scary too, I think, to the people that control things, the people in the government, the people in these corporations. That's why they don't really want to, you know, let this information and let these ideas out about all these different ways of producing energy off the grid, because then they would lose control of the power, and then there's no telling what people are liable to do.
Well, right, until they become a necessity, which it's becoming now, where me and you live with San Onofre going offline, they're being forced to build these absolutely massive solar plants out in the Mojave. They want to line most of the dead, the dead canyon zones around there where they can't do anything with them, with solar panels, and all reflect off each other. And they said the Mojave Desert makes enough solar power to power all of California, including the north, all the way up to the north and everything. So, you know, at some point, somebody in state government's going to say, you know what, we're actually losing $35 billion a year in tax revenue to the federal government and not getting it back in return. And we may be better off kind of becoming our own little place and powering ourselves with solar through the Mojave Desert.
Yeah, and then, you know, the only problem is around here is that you have these energy monopolies that are – they're financing these buildings off of our backs, and then they become sole owners of these things.
Well, until a co-op co-ops it, which they did in Sacramento.
Exactly, man. And that's what we need to do is not only push forward with these new ideas as far as scientifically, but economically we need to rethink the way that they distribute these ideas, the way that these power co-ops are, these power companies are run, because they're so influential and they control the power for so many people. It's not right for it to be publicly financed and then privately profited off of.
No.
If it's publicly financed, then the people that are financing it should also own it. You know, it only makes sense.
Right. I mean, there's all these new technologies coming out now where I don't know if you've heard about how now we're in the second generation of windmills, where we had the original tin windmill, which pushed a crank and it had a wooden frame, and it usually worked by providing pressure for your deep well, so you had some kind of running water, you know, on your farm. Now we have second generation, which are the rotor type, and the new one, the next one coming out, is solar sail. It's the same exact technology they've been using on high-end yachts, where what it'll do is it'll collect solar energy at the same time the wind pushing it. And then it also will collect the heat coming off of like the sand. So it works in three ways, and it just makes huge amounts of power per square foot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and there's all these new ideas, all these open source ideas coming out, and it's just a matter of time until they start, start being implemented exponentially. And then we'll start to see the reliance on all these, you know, all these things that are easily centralized. What we have to do is look and see, like, where are services and goods bottlenecked? Where do they get monopolized? And that's the point where we should really start to focus on, you know, undoing those types of monopolies by building better systems, you know, because that's where everything can be exploited.
Right. So, Nick, while it's still fresh in my mind to ask you about it, how was Sacramento and your experience up there and everything?
Oh, it was pretty cool, man. We had a bunch of cool people on the bus, and it was only $20 to get to Sacramento and back, which is like a 9-hour drive or something like that from here in San Diego. And it was cool, and we went to this big anti-fracking rally. It was probably the biggest rally I've ever been to. There's about 4,000 people or so there. And I mean, it was good. I mean, in California, we can't be having this fracking because we don't have the water. We don't have the water to do it, and the place where they want to do the fracking is like right under the primest farmland in the country, you know, and that's not the kind of stuff that we want to be risking.
Well, so, we're in this weird geopolitical push with Russia where we have to kind of maintain our energy independence to keep the pressure on them so they don't flood a market with their cheap oil, and then they'll even start fracking their own Siberian outback because no one really lives there, and they'll go crazy with fracking, and plus they have tons of reserves as it is. So that's what it's all about. We're fracking basically to keep this shell game going as long as we can. We're trying to outlast, I guess Russia and China both, and wait for their own economies to implode before ours does, and kind of take advantage of being the last guy standing. I mean, this is what my own research has led me to believe is what's going on right now. It's this massive dog and pony show and proxy war, endless string of them. And somebody's going down first. The other two will jump on them like vultures. And then whenever that guy's done, they'll cannibalize each other. That's what it seems like is going to happen.
Well, there was a study out of NASA. I don't know if you saw this, but they were basically saying, yeah, they were saying what we've been saying for a while now, is that, you know, at the rate that society is going, the direction they're going, and the massive disparity of wealth between the poor and then the huge amounts of wealth that the rich have, they actually looked at it and compared it back to the Roman Empire, et cetera. Like, we've been talking about how Americans now are basically like Roman citizens of the past.
Right.
And this is out of NASA, and they're basically saying, yeah, this way of living isn't sustainable, and it's going to collapse just like every other civilization that was similar to it collapsed.
But there's two ways to do it. There's the dignified way, which is where people go back to an agrarian type of living standard, but with still some high-tech goodies. I mean, I'm always going to say this. If we get 10 to 20 people to band together and get all these high-tech goodies before this so-called collapse hits – we'll be able to grow our own food, have power, and live still a pretty comfy life. But people got to band together. If you're in a big city when this so-called thing happens, those are going to be like big prisons, and everything will be tightened up.
Here's one thing that's kind of concerning to me. It's kind of like – I think it's with these recent quakes and stuff, tectonic activity that's going on the West Coast. I think that, anyone that's on the West Coast, anyone near the water should be really having, you know, especially if you're in the big cities like L.A. or San Diego, man, there's just so many people. If you were to get caught in downtown L.A. and a tsunami hit, you're basically, you know, every man for himself. If you can climb up a building or get inside of a building and happen to survive it, you know, you're one of the lucky ones. So, anyone on the West Coast, judging by these earthquakes that have been going on, I mean, you should just be prepared to have some kind of exit route to get to high ground just in case anything happens.
Well, that's always been the case. And thankfully, right where me and you are, we're on the cusp of being kind of like made into a peninsula if something happens in L.A. kind of crumbling, you know, above us to the north. But yeah, there's, you know, they've always said it's Modesto and Fresno by the sea are a possibility. That was like always this weird rhyme about how the big one would do that on that particular plate and how it would slide off. And they used it in the movie 2012, I believe, where that whole thing just slid off and the other one undercut it and just pushed everything into the ocean. So, yeah, I mean, this fracking is, how could they, what would they think? This is the worst state you could possibly do it in.
I mean, yeah, we already have our own tectonic, you know, we already have our own earthquakes and all this stuff. Why would we even want to add to the problem with this fracking? And they just stopped fracking in Ohio, I believe it was, because they've determined that the fracking over there is what was causing these little earthquakes that they were having, which, you know, Ohio hardly ever has earthquakes. But ever since they started fracking out there, they started getting a lot of these earthquakes. And of course, you have the other people that have their water catching on fire, which is another huge problem. And they're also drying up a lot of these water tables and stuff. So, I mean, all around it's maybe in some areas it could be safe if all the resources were there and stuff. But in most areas, especially around people, I mean, I don't think it's a good idea.
Here's the thing. You know, if you look where the money is being divested right now and seeing where certain states are starting to legalize industrial hemp, you know, states like Maryland and Virginia where traditionally tobacco has been grown. I see right now this slow kind of long-term collapse of the traditional oil, and we're going to go to the hemp fuel. I think they're transitioning all the infrastructure over that, and then liquid natural gas for the trucks so that we can get off diesel too and go to things we can grow. Or things we have massive abundance of, like natural gas, which we do have enormous natural gas fields on the East Coast. So, yeah, I think we're going to shift into this crazy new economy sooner than later, and that they're just kind of delaying it, stalling it as long as possible, even though this fracking they know is stupid long term, that short term, it's a game they need to play right now to make sure everything's in place.
Well, you know, when you're about to lose something, when you're about to lose a game, you milk it for all it's worth, you know?
Exactly.
And think of it. Anyone that works at a job, you know, that when they know they're going to quit, they know they're going to fire, they're just milking it, you know? And so I think obviously these guys are thinking the same type of thing. So they're like, all right, well, let's face it. The economy's coming down. People are going to rethink the economy, and unfortunately, a lot of us are going to be cut out of the equation. You know, a lot of these CEO guys and a lot of these central bankers and all this stuff. Obviously, people are going to cut these guys out because they don't want them having any part of these new ideas. So, right. So they know that they're about to be on unsteady ground. So now they're just trying to milk it for what it's worth.
Right. If you're not sustainable, and if you're a private investor right now, I don't know, under 40 years old, and you're not investing in sustainable type of products, things like industrial hemp and things like that, which are going to basically be able to be grown forever and provide fuel, clothing, and even concrete for building material. Like those kind of investments, although they'll take forever to pan out, will eventually make you very, very wealthy if you get in on them. And they're where the smart money is being put right now. You know, they're just shifting it slowly, slowly, slowly. Because if they do it quickly, it throws the market off, and then everybody gets what's going on, and the game's up.
Well, you'd have to think there's probably a really big influx of hemp jobs that are going into places like Colorado and Washington. You know, so because there you can commercially grow hemp. They even say you can do it in California, but I don't know. There's probably a bunch of loopholes you got to jump through. But imagine the hemp industry that's going to pop up in these states that start legalizing this stuff. This is where the economy should be going, like you were saying. It shouldn't be going into fracking and stuff like that. It should be going into making hemp oil. It'd be a lot better.
And the perfect example is like recently, for the first time that and as long as anyone can remember, you know, Paris had to have a day where they had to ban all cars because they had so much smog from the humidity and the unseasonably warm, warm, muggy weather that people were hacking along like in Beijing in Paris. And they're like, you can't drive your car. If we see you driving your car today and you're not a cab, like, we'll fine you. You know, and that's never happened in Paris before, you know. So the climate's massively changing. It's getting hot, getting cold. It's just changing. Probably the poles are getting ready to do their flipperoo here soon. And, yeah. These are the precursors to it.
So, back to this Ukraine thing, and it's so hypocritical coming from the U.S. government, where they come out and they make these statements and they act like they have like this moral high ground, and there was just this Orwellian doublespeak that was going on, and basically Obama signed an executive order that anyone they deem to be undermining democracy in Ukraine can have all of their assets seized, any U.S. citizen.
Yeah.
So, you know, the thing is that the crazy part is that the U.S. government was instrumental in undermining the democracy because the previous government there was democratically elected. And now they took over the government, and all of a sudden the U.S. is like saying that like now we have to respect the constitution of Ukraine now that it's like after there was already an overthrow of the government, which they basically helped orchestrate. So it's like saying we know what democracy is, but you don't. Anyone else that tries it, you know, we're against it. And so it's our version of democracy or no version of democracy.
Right. I mean, at least the other one's just naked aggression. So, you know, it's already not democracy anyway. It's oligarchy. So, yeah, I mean, pick your poison. And then the thing is that the people in that country have always had a division themselves because a lot of the people there feel they are European. You know, they feel the Western side is more in touch with, I don't know, probably Eastern Europe than they are with Russia. So it's a natural place to sow the seeds of division like usual. You know, Sudan was probably something that got out of their control. They didn't anticipate doing that, but it did divide it. And I don't know what happened to the oil in the north, but These are little economic hitman games they like to play. And they get out of control sometimes, or sometimes they work really way too well, like this is doing, where it appears it may be getting them the war they wanted. But honestly, do we really want to fight? Why would superpowers ever want to fight? How would it end?
I don't think the citizens want to fight.
No, I mean, well, they know it will happen. If you're in a bigger city, you're going to get hit with something. There's going to be all kinds of things flying around, and nobody wants to be involved in the super high-tech stuff they have right now. I mean, it's going to be major, major casualties, not like World War II. I mean, this stuff's going to be ultra-lethal, so it's not like many people will be around after to argue about what went wrong.
Well, do you think that Russian citizens would actually want to fight after what happened to them in World War II? I don't think those people are looking to fight a big war.
No.
You know, so it's once again, it's these governments getting their noses into all these other people's businesses and drawing lines in the sand, painting new borders, this, that, and the other thing. It's all part of this same problem, and it's back to that NASA study that says that if we keep doing things this way, it's just inevitably going to rise and fall, just like the Roman Empire. So it's like, if we don't defeat the ideas, and we keep if we defeat the people that are carrying out the ideas, that's one thing. That's only part of the problem, but it's the ideas themselves. So if another person comes along and then these ideas are still there, it's just like replacing the figurehead. It's basically all you're doing. You know, so it's really a matter of when, as a human race, are we going to start rethinking the ideas instead of just replacing figureheads?
When things run out and people fight, and then whoever's left standing is going to have to fend for themselves and come up with new ideas. That seems to be the blueprint for what they're preparing for. They're preparing for hiding underground or in bases and being super protected and letting everybody else fend for themselves when this happens. And getting all prepped for it and doing all kinds of who knows what to distract us, like invasions and fake alien stuff in the sky, who knows what. So that's what they're getting ready for. At least they're getting ready for that.
And it's all economic, man.
Of course, because we're at the point where the cheap low-hanging fruit is gone. The cheap oil is gone. All the cheap energy is gone. The crops that we'd grown so plentifully when the climate was more or less predictable, well, those crops now are only being kept artificially cheap with GMOs, which are awful for us. So, and then people are just not ready to transition to having to grow their own crops, supplement food because it's going to increase so expensive and still go to work to make ends meet. I mean, that's what it's going to boil down to at some point.
Well, how many people do you think have fruit trees in their houses or in their yards that they don't actually eat?
I mean, a lot, probably. Probably half the people that have fruit trees don't even pick their own fruit. No.
That's why we need to start utilizing a lot of these resources. And then you think about the lawns, man. How many people have just these little lawns that are just – or even worse, they don't even have a lawn. They just have like what used to be a lawn and a bunch of dirt and dust.
Right.
I mean these yards should be – you know, they should be thinking about growing their own food and creating – by doing that, you create a little – you make the initial – foundation of a local economy, you know, if you're able to do that.
You'll have to. I mean, little towns are already doing those things. When you look, you pop up Google Earth online and look down at little communities and you see, you know, on the outskirts, people have tiny little supplemental farm patches and things growing in their yards all over the place because they make like 10 or 15,000 a year doing a job and they need to eat well. So they need to grow it. It's just the reality. So when we get to that point in big cities, you're going to be able to, you know, eat by going to these handout places, you know, where you get welfare. But would you rather do that or would you rather grow your own food?
Exactly, man. And I think the better choice is to grow your own food. And if not on your own land, doesn't mean you can't grow your own food. You can grow it on someone else's yard that has a yard that's just being, you know, that's just sitting there.
Right.
You know, and at least have something going at the very least. So you have some kind of bartering things as well.
Now, have you been able to find out any more information about that flight, the 370 flight, and what's the latest on it?
Well, no, man. It's just that the official story just keeps changing and changing and changing. And now the media is realizing people are tired of it, and now the media is trying to blame it on the Malaysian government, saying that they've been feeding us misinformation and stuff like that.
What government? You mean the Chinese government? Because that's a puppet client. Like, you know what I mean? So this is the crackpot theory I've heard. There's a patent for a very, very good energy transmission system or something like that. I'd really have to research it more, but it's a very defined patent that's very valuable. One of them that owned them was the semiconductor company, and then four others were Chinese nationals. And that they said, well, to protect those four guys, they flew under another plane and flew it into Chinese airspace and landed on a military base, all radar invisible. And that everybody's in China somewhere protecting these four super scientist guys, because otherwise the plane was going to get, you know, basically dusted, and that somehow they were able to prevent that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I have no clue. Yeah. But it's like the fact is that it's still getting blanket coverage. It's insane. Like, why is this story getting blanket coverage? It's either a huge distraction or it's a primer. You know what I mean? It's like they're trying to build us up to something. It's weird. You know, I can't really tell. I can't tell if they're just pulling a distraction or if they're trying to, like, amp us up to something big. You know, and that's the part that's kind of scary. So it's like,
well, I think something got diverted that they didn't want diverted. I think they wanted something to blow up out of that, and nothing has, because there's really no evidence of anything. The cell phones keep ringing, so there's somewhere around that's still going somewhere.
Hey, if the phones are still ringing, I mean, they must have power somewhere. They plug in their phone
somewhere. I mean, that makes sense. Another plane comes up. They do some kind of crazy maneuver and get radar invisible in an area where it's got Bermuda Triangle-like interferences, and do a little switcheroo underneath them, fly into a base. I mean, crazier things have happened.
I think I've seen this script before in that one show.
Right. Wasn't this done in The World Is Not Enough or something? I mean, it's probably super spy stuff that's going on.
Oh, man. It's just too much. The other thing we got is this Connecticut gun civil disobedience, which is pretty, in my opinion, it's pretty awesome. You know, these people are basically, you know, they were saying they have to register their guns. Now, remember, Connecticut is the state where the Sandy Hook thing happened. And these guys are just like, nah, we're not going to register these guns. You can come get them from us if you want to try.
Well, what else are you going to do? It's just, everything's going to be lawsuit city. And everybody's going to love all these lawyers right now. Like, I hope this new crop of lawyers that are coming out in the next couple of years understand that it's class action lawsuit forever from here on out. We're just going to divert so much money out of the treasury to each private, you know, case going on and each win that happens, because all these civil rights are being violated essentially. These are supposed to be natural rights that you're born into, not to be considered guilty of pre-crime and thought crime and all these other things that are allow you to be a human being and make your own decisions, have your own willpower. And judges have to understand that if they vote with their own conscience, they can never go against people that are fighting this stuff, because their own humanity is at stake too.
Yeah, man, and as of now, we still have that human element. So in the end, these people can be swayed with enough pressure and doing the right things. Even though these people are bureaucrats and politicians, a lot, not all of them, but a lot of them could actually be changed. Their minds could be changed, and they could, you know, side with us eventually one day, and sooner or later.
When things are done not in our name, that are fundamentally against what we grew up understanding about what our country was, which was free because we were well armed as a population and able to protect ourselves from all enemies. Well, if somebody's trying to disarm you, they're an enemy. We already know that, right? And the people know that. We're not stupid. So when they say come get them, well, if somebody's going to come break in and kill a family over this, how do you really think that community will allow that? It won't. It's not going to allow it even in the Northeast, which is one of the most, you know, patriotic so-called places where they'll allow things that would happen after, you know, the Boston debacle. They'll still, they're still going to resist something that would be so heinous like that. And then even the cops would have to question their own role and being these lackeys who just murdered innocents because they wanted to keep the only means of protection.
Yeah, man, it's all amping up, you know, and it's amping up into this police state that at every angle you look at it, it's cracking down. I got detained on Saturday in Sacramento, because I was smoking weed at the Capitol, on the Capitol, building property, apparently. And, these guys sniffed me out pretty quick. I tried to play it smooth and get out of there, but they got me and they detained me. And like, I tried to deny them consent to search me, but the guy was like, it's too bad, man. We already have probable cause because you're smoking right there, so we get to search you no matter what. And my buddy was right there, and he was a lawyer too, and he was like, he's right. I was like, oh, damn. You know what I mean? But, you know, the fact is that they had four cops surrounding me on their bikes. They made a square around me, no joke. And then they had me right there. They dug through my stuff and, you know, basically embarrassed me in front of everyone, slapped me with a ticket. You know, thankfully in California, it's decriminalized, but you know, in another state per se, I could have been looking at some, you know, real trouble right there.
You know, what's the really criminal act is that I bet they're all wearing really tight pants.
Yeah, man. They're all on bikes, all super douchey too.
Yeah, exactly. They all had manpons on.
But other than that, Sacramento was cool. It's a pretty cool town. I mean, the people there were pretty cool. It seemed like there was a lot of people from all over the place, you know, San Francisco and all that good stuff. And I got to meet some people that I only knew from Facebook. I ran into PM Beers, the live streamer from LA. And
nice.
Got to talk to her a bit. Yeah, so it was cool, man. I got to meet some people.
Yep. And, you know, we're going to spearhead everything here. I mean, everybody likes to make fun of only in California, blah, blah, blah. But then anything that happens here, it'll spread. It'll spread for sure. It'll just keep going.
Yep. Hey, I'm going to try to bring on Michael in a few seconds here to see if we can talk about some of these off-grid ideas.
Awesome.
And trying to opt out of the grid, you know, which is really the main objective instead of,
well,
you know,
opting out of labor to eat, really. If you can make your own food, then you don't have to work to buy food, and you can buy other stuff or save it for something important.
Yeah, exactly. And we can build away from it, you know?
Exactly. Yep.
So I'm calling him. Let's see if we can get him on here. All right. Hey, Michael.
How you doing?
How's it going, man? You're on the Anti-Media Radio.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Just if you want to give a quick introduction to yourself and all your projects you're working on, and give everyone your links that's listening so they can check out your work, and then I'll post them in the chat room so that anyone could check it out.
All right. Well, I started at the Occupy Wall Street movement, and, you know, thinking that it probably wasn't, like, progressive enough for me. I felt that, you know, people were trying to request a lot of things from the government and corporations, you know, and it seemed kind of really against what I was all about. And so in December, I decided to start Occupy Tesla, which was pretty much, you know, we should take the power back by taking the means of production back, you know, rather than trying to request it from the higher ups in the world.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, we can waste a lot of time trying to influence these politicians. But I honestly think that it's better to spend time building new solutions and making these old ideas obsolete, because part of the problem with talking about these ideas is that people don't really, it's harder to get people to believe in them until they can see them working, you know. So right. At the same time, while many people are shedding light on what's going on and how the establishment is doing us wrong, we also have to spend like just as much energy on building solutions to say, look, yeah, this is what's wrong, but this is what's right, or this is what works. This is what doesn't work, and this is what does.
Right, exactly. And this is really the amazing thing about, you know, like movements such as these. There's like a big permaculture movement, and permaculture is it's pretty much using a lot of amazing techniques which will help you to overproduce, you know, like much more, you know, through methods of polyculture and natural organic pesticides that you can make out of the plants that you're growing already, you know. And it's more about integrating plants, you know. Let's say you plant some garlic, it could perhaps act as a repellent toward these certain types of bugs. And so instead of using a pesticide, you could do that instead.
Yeah, there was a study that just came out of Sri Lanka. I don't know if you saw it, but Sri Lanka actually just banned Roundup and a bunch of other pesticides because they had a study that showed a correlation between these pesticides and kidney damage. So they just had to ban them. This is like pretty current. It just happened a few days ago.
And male infertility, and also male regression. If you know what that means, it doesn't sound good to me.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, like we had to learn from this lesson over and over again. We had a lot of we had a big problem with DDTs across the planet, and that was causing a lot of birth defects and other associated mental illnesses, which could possibly, you know, not just possibly, but it has been damaging a lot of DDT and PCBs. Over time, we've been learning, you know, like when you add these things to the environment on such a constant basis at such an alarming rate, it has seriously negative effects that are completely irreversible. You know, all of us have DDT in our bodies, and many of us have PCBs in our bodies, and this stuff is just in the soil. Glyphosate is in the rain, and it's absolutely wild what we've done to our planet, you know?
Yeah, and you know, the food, in my opinion, the food system is part of this big grid. You know, it's part of this big grid, which is also includes the water, includes the electricity, and other, you know, essential resources, which can be, for instance, like what's happening in Palestine, how these resources are being cut off. And so the people end up suffering because they're being embargoed, or because of it's hard to access the resources, or whatever it is that's going on. And you know, that's a big problem, and it's a huge part of the whole oppression of the people in the world is suppressing resources and controlling resources. So I wanted to get into some ideas about how it is we can go into, you know, opting out, checking out of the grid, and whatever it is you think is most important. I don't know if it's the water, the food, the power, but what direction do you think we should start taking as far as getting off this grid, and what are some ideas that maybe we could, you know, some like ideas that people can try out at home, some small scale stuff to try to at least go partially off the grid?
When forming this movement, we tried to, you know, like cover all of our bases. For instance, you know, like let's say that tomorrow there actually would be a collapse, a global collapse. Well, what would everybody need? What would you need essentially? And we broke it down to like 8 things. And these 8 things will range from agriculture to energy. We need housing. We definitely need education and healthcare. We need potable water. And we need infrastructure. We need a manner of transporting these resources back and forth. I mean, clean air was one that we decided, but, you know, I guess, you know, we pretty much have breathable air at least, so it's not an extremely alarming issue. It's something that we can do better with, of course. But, you know, out of these 8 main subjects of human society, what you can do is you can find experts, you know, and an expert is not necessarily, you know, to say somebody who is supremely educated, although of course you would want those people to help you too. But what you need is people who will actually take it upon themselves to create better systems that are more sustainable to implement in their local areas. And the more that you can actually create these basic necessities for humanity in these local areas, the more you'll be able to actually gain that freedom, move away from having an overarching system providing for you. Because as long as that overarching system is providing for you, you're at their whim. You know, like, we have natural gas lines everywhere. They provide our heat. They provide the gas for us to cook. I mean, what happens one day when suddenly a line ruptures? It's the middle of winter. Or there's just no more gas. It's just not coming anymore. Or inflation is so ridiculous that no one can afford it anymore. So what happens then? If you're not already off the grid, you're going to have some issues.
Well, there was a story a while back about these guys, these snipers that actually were shooting. They took out a few of these little power they took out a couple little what were they? The little boxes that transform the transformers, yeah. And it kind of flew under the radar, but these guys took out a bunch of these transformers in this area, and it caused like a big power outage. And I read earlier that there was, I believe, if terrorists were to attack 9 of our power stations, certain ones, it would basically cause a strain that would black out like basically the entire country. You know, so it's the grid itself is so vulnerable. And we had a blackout here in Southern California. What was it, like a year, maybe 2 years ago? And we were only blacked out for less than a day. And people were already absolutely going nuts. I mean, there was a few places that got looted. You know, there was almost riot situations. It was insane. You know, and people don't realize how delicate this grid really is.
And that's why I like the simplicity of sustainability. When it comes to energy, it's actually very, very simple to actually build something such as a vertical axis wind turbine, for instance. The resources are already all around you, even if you live in an urban area. Well, I guess especially then for building a wind turbine. If you were to just get some PVC pipe, some bike rims, an alternator, some cables, and some batteries, then you already have, you know, like most of what you need already. You get an inverter, and there's your power.
That's awesome. And that can be done like in a really tight space, and like it's even in on top of buildings where it's really windy, that would be perfect.
Right, right. And so, you know, like it's really, really simple things like these that we try to teach people at Occupy Tesla. And we have a group in which we like to just search the web for things and talk with one another and try to come up with, you know, basic simple solutions, basic simple education and knowledge that we can actually get out there to the world and, you know, like get them not just prepared for it, but actually give them everything they need to know about becoming off the grid, you know. So if you want to grow food, well, I mean, what should you do with your land, for instance? How should you do it? And what are really good foods that you should plant? It's really important to us that we don't just show people that there are alternatives, but that we actually give them the full education. So on our like page, we actually have photo albums in which we separate all these things into different topics. You know, if somebody wants to learn about how to produce energy, there's an entire album full of pictures, and each picture has, you know, these large descriptions. You have pictures about building battery banks and how to put together a solar panel system. Solar panels, you know, I can really see them gaining a lot more efficiency as time goes on. It's not as sustainable as one would think because it takes a lot to produce a solar panel. And then you have to ship it, of course. But in recent times, they are gaining a lot more efficiency. But a few years ago, they weren't producing more energy than it took to produce them, which is well, it's kind of contradictory in a way because it's supposed to be renewable, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But there's do you know anything about this solar thermal technology where it's basically like where they have reflectors and they reflect back onto like a water kettle and it spins like a turbine or whatever? Those, from what I've read, those are a little more efficient.
That would be a Stirling engine. Stirling engines are wonderful because they actually work using a diaphragm and a type of a medium, kind of a medium in like a little tiny engine. Sometimes people will use a liquid. Sometimes it could just be air. But as long as you heat the chamber in which this medium is, then the cycle goes through the Stirling chamber and it'll just pump it, and give you massive RPMs. It's very, very powerful little thing. It's so wild. I've seen a lot of videos on YouTube with people that have Stirling engines that move at thousands of RPMs, and I just sit there with my eyes wide open, completely floored.
So with these Stirling engines,
solar thermal,
is it possible to heat them with other sources of heat and make them, you know, make them produce?
Yeah, you can heat it with anything that provides you with heat energy. Some people have used a phenolics, which is pretty much like a giant magnifying glass, and you can use the light of the sun through the Fresnel lens and point it at the Stirling engine, you know, to give it that heat. Or you can use a fire, for instance. What I'm really into with solar thermal is providing off the grid heat, because, you know, heating takes a lot of energy.
Right.
It takes a ridiculous amount of energy. So,
I mean, a solar heat, yeah. A solar water heater is like one of the best investments you can make just to get started, because you can a lot of the times never even engage your water heater if you just take 5 or 10 minute long shower.
Exactly. And a lot of the solar water heating technology is absolutely out of this world. My favorite of the type is actually the evacuated tubes. There's a type of solar collector which has pretty much it has your medium in there in a little tube, and it's separated. It's pretty much like one tube inside of a glass tube, and glass tube has all the air sucked out of it, so there's no molecules in between to change temperature, and so radiation just beams right through the glass and there's nothing to cool it down in between. So even in temperatures of like negative 30 degrees Fahrenheit, of course, your water would still be 80 degrees, even on a cloudy day. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
Yeah. I've also seen these guys heat this water with these piles of wood chips. Have you seen those?
I'm not sure if I've seen that. I've heard of the concepts of compost heat, of course.
Yeah, it's basically compost heating, but they use just wood chips, and then they like they put layers of wood, and they put water, and then they run the piping through it like in a spiral, and then they just keep putting layers of this wood and then water, and then after a while, these guys were getting the temperatures like up over 100 degrees. It was pretty crazy, and it was cool because there was snow like all around it too, and it was like still really hot.
It's gorgeous.
So,
and the best thing that you can do to go off the grid is to combine all of these techniques. And that was where I was going with solar thermal technology, is that if you want to get off the grid, want off the grid electricity, then imagine just how much electricity it's going to take you to heat your water or to heat your home. You know, and then you need a gigantic battery bank, and that's going to cost you thousands and thousands of dollars. But if you were able to combine all of these techniques, all of these multiple techniques, then you could actually do it much sooner, much more efficiently, much more cost effectively, and you always have backup systems to provide you for where you're not going to have possible sun at the time or possible wind.
So how do we go about doing that? How do we go about combining these things?
And more importantly, Michael, would you have any idea of a dollar amount that people would have in mind to get started on something like this now? You know, that's affordable, and even maybe it might even be financeable while this economic system sham is still going on.
Yeah. Well, I think that it's really easy to start small. I think that if you're a builder, or if you know someone who's a builder, then you can actually scrounge up some materials for a few hundred bucks and start getting going on this. I know I have a few friends who, over the course of like 2 or 3 years, they've actually found a lot of trading posts, you know, or meetup places where they trade things with people. And they'll end up getting, you know, a few batteries or solar controllers and things like that. I wouldn't really have a ballpark price. It really depends on what you're trying to go with. But I'd say that, like, if you were to start off with about $2,000, it would be a great start. It would be a screen start. But you really have to be educated about these things. You have to know what you're doing in order to do it right.
So you said about $2,000 or so?
Yeah.
That's not too bad. And
unless
now,
you go out and you scrounge materials.
Yeah,
then
exactly.
They can be much cheaper.
So you scrounge, you repurpose, recycle, and then you can also crowdfund, you know, get a few neighbors to help pitch in on this thing. I mean, you get a couple neighbors, you can do it for like $200 each. And then at least you all have a backup, basically a generator, a shared generator for everybody. And it's not powered by gas, which is part of the grid. You know, it's powered by air, winds, and
solar. With all the money that you give on bills, then you'll be able to save up money even faster in case you want to do something like upgrade or add another system, which will get you off the grid.
And this goes back to kind of to what me and DB talked about a couple weeks ago about forming these kind of energy cooperatives to start kind of replacing these big energy conglomerates. We start building back out from the grassroots level, from, you know, the crowdsourcing level, which I think it really is the future, and the open source stuff. And we start building these energy co-ops that are way cheaper. And see, that's the thing. If we can start building these things and prove to people that they're going to save a lot of money and have only a limited investment to start off with, then we're going to see just a lot of people start looking at this stuff. Even people that don't even really care about the environment, they don't really care about the idea. They just want to save money. And that's where you hit that's where like the mainstream people are at. They don't really care about much. They just want to save some money, you know, and then if these co-ops start taking off and they're legitimate and they're actually, you know, helping people cut back on their energy bills and not have to pay that much up front, everyone's going to want to do it. And then,
right. Then
at that point, the grid, it'll like revolutionize itself in a short amount of time.
And it just takes a little bit of knowledge, a little bit of actual drive and will to actually want to actually have that change. And that was one of the biggest things that I had realized about a lot of people, is that we're so used to having everything provided for us that we no longer understand that we can do something ourselves.
It's like
we no longer understand that we can provide for ourselves.
We're like babied by this establishment, but at the same time they're abusing us, you know. And it's like a bad relationship where we get the worst end of the deal both ways. And so not only are we getting complacent and getting used to relying on all this stuff and on the government, on the services, on the grid, you know, on the entitlements, on the security and all this stuff, on the police force, that we don't really understand when they don't do the right thing. We don't really know how to deal with it. And when these cops are going out and beating people in the streets and killing people, it's like, in fact, more people have been killed by the police than soldiers have been killed in the Iraqi war. So it's like when these things let us down, people don't really know how to deal with it. They just can't. They don't realize, you know, what's going on, because they're so reliant on this stuff. So if we can build people away from this reliance, it just creates like basically the lubrication for the ideas to start to flow faster.
Right. And I somehow always come back to the idea that this may have been all accidental. We may have just been so complacent over such a long period of time and advancing in so many different ways that we just became stuck in this mindset and notion that things are just this way now. And look, it's still improving. Everything's still getting better. Oh, my. I love what's happening. I love what's happening. Oh, I've forgotten how to provide it for myself now.
And now it seems that things are going awry. And that's like the whole basis of permaculture too. It's, you know, having a permanent culture, something that you can pass on, you know, through generation and generation and generation. What we have today is very temporary. It's not going to last. It's going to change with the next iPhone upgrade, if you will.
So, when it comes to food, and we were talking about earlier in the show about how the climate is acting, you know, the climate is extreme right now. It's you got a ton of snow out in the Northeast and in the Midwest, and then out here on the West Coast, we're in this massive drought. So, when it comes to the food, are there any ideas about growing where we can reduce the impact? Because now that the climate is so unpredictable, you know, are there ways of going about setting up gardens or growing food that can help kind of hedge against the way the climate fluctuates?
There are actually a lot of really, really important pieces of knowledge that people should really get to know more about when it comes to plants. For instance, having trees actually causes rain, because trees actually drop moisture from their leaves and they provide a cover. And in this cover, there's like a microclimate. And underneath this microclimate, there's a lot of moisture building up, and wind is created from this microclimate, because wind is created by the difference in temperature in the air environment. And so, like, having a forest creates an environment, believe it or not. And you can actually reverse desertification or turn a desert into a forest with different land management techniques, such as key line planting. It's really wild. It's really intense, to be honest. There's a lot of information about all these things, and we really try to provide all of it on the site.
And once again,
my main goal is just to do that. You know, I really want to compile everything I can to help people understand how they can take it upon themselves.
And just so you, everyone listening knows, the site is Occupy Tesla, and there's a page.
Facebook.com/OccupyTesla.
And then from there, make sure you join the group and get in on the discussion, because, I mean, these are ideas that starting small, like we talked about, anyone and everyone should be able to start picking this stuff up. And what better way, especially like for kids too that want to do science experiments. I know that kids back when I was doing that kind of stuff were already working on some kind of things like this. I mean, it's a great idea for kids, and I think that the next like really great ideas are going to be coming from like children. And if we have this open source culture, this internet culture, free information type of culture, then, you know, we're going to start seeing these absolutely genius ideas start to be unlocked by kids, start to be unlocked by people in the third world that are finally getting access to internet. And if we can keep getting this information out there for free, you know, and getting these classes and these college courses more accessible to kids that normally wouldn't have access, I mean, that alone, those ideas alone that are going to come out of that is enough to just completely reshape what's going on. You know, so another big part of all of this open source information is that we have to keep an eye on what's going on with the internet and make sure that we keep the internet as free as possible.
And nothing's worth a damn without independent power.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then we also have to think about building the internet away from the grid as well. And, you know, ways of kind of creating internet like they've done in Greece in this one city that created this kind of off-grid internet co-op. You know, that's another way that we got to go to keep counteracting all this you know, all these power grabs over the internet. I mean, there's bill after bill that goes through Congress. They just keep changing the names. I mean, it was what, PIPA, SOPA, CISPA. I mean, how many times are they going to keep trying it until they finally get it through when we don't realize it?
Well, now it's spy on Feinstein, so she's not going to stand for it anymore. No more spying on the elites.
Well, they're going to pull a Bieber distraction and then slip the internet out from under us, you know, and that's where we got to be careful as well. Hey, Michael, hey, thanks for being on. Make sure you guys check out Occupy Tesla. That's the end of the show. Make sure you guys tune in Wednesday and Friday, same time.
Have a good night.